Support for Reporting on Technology and Innovation comes from Juna Sleep System. Personalize your mattress. More information at junasleep.com.
Welcome to the November 17th edition of In the Moment Tech Radio. I'm your host, Ken Osborne. We've gathered the experts to talk tech today, answer the questions you have concerning tech and other things. In the studios of KCSD in Sioux Falls, we have from Exigent, their Chief Security Officer, Amos Asap. Hi, Amos.
Hi, Kent. How are you?
How are you today?
Good, good.
Awesome. We have some...
Lonely here.
Lonely. Well, Lori's there to keep you company, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah. Well, Lori and I'm trying to get her to become one of our panelists, but...
She should be. She's one button push away, literally, from joining us on the show. So, anyway, we'll try to guilt her. We'll guilt her on later, I think. But we have some interesting things to talk about today. You have a topic about some DNS safety we want to get to. And that interests me and should interest those in our listening community as well. So stand by, Amos. Let's introduce the rest of the folks on the show today. Mac guru Joel Brovelite is here, fresh with a new iPhone X, Joel.
I do have one, yes. So, although I'm not in the studio, so I can't let everybody play with it.
But yeah, we'll get there eventually. Eventually, we'll all have our turn, I believe. But I want to hear some open box stories from you and see if you've experienced any of the issues, I would say, that some Xbox 10 folks have, or if everything's just the sun is shining on Apple land in your world. But we'll get to you shortly with those stories. Also joining us from the Bureau in Peer, the Bureau of Information and Telecommunications, Jeff Litterick is on the line. Hi, Jeff.
Hello.
How is things at the Bureau? Coming along nicely, I imagine?
Yeah, it's getting to the holiday times. Stuff's actually picking up and getting quite busy between personal and government side. So.
Sure. Are you on the gaming side of things? Are you excited about the holiday season, or is it just another year?
Well, actually, yeah, I kind of am, but the game's already out. I wasn't too excited to be in with about Destiny 2, but it's kind of shook me in, and Wolfenstein 2 has turned out really good after a patch fix. But the big one that's kind of coming out right now is Star Wars 1. That is decidedly mixed reviews to negative. There's a lot of conference about this with in-game cash and loot boxes and stuff, and even though EA's backing off, there's a lot of boycotts going on and stuff, and I'm not hearing good stuff about the gameplay itself. So the rest of the games that are coming out this year are not really exciting, I'm afraid. The good ones are out, so...
Okay, and so basically Black Friday and Cyber Monday for folks might have a good opportunity to pick up some of those good games, but at a cheaper price coming around this year.
Yeah, though it's kind of interesting in the whole Cyber Monday, Cyber Friday. It's this year. It's Cyber November, and it's Black Friday November, and maybe December too. We'll see. But to be honest, every place I shop has been doing specials for 3 weeks now, and it looks like there's really nothing super outside of some TV sets at Walmart. For the actual Black Friday itself, so it's more of a continuing of a whole month, and it's changing, and people are noticing it's changing too. How the Black Friday deals and stuff are going.
Sure. Well, we'll circle back to that later in the show, and definitely want to talk about Battlefront 2 and some issues with that you mentioned. But we'll get to that, folks in the listening audience. You can ask those questions if you'd like, or others. We provide the answers. If you're on Facebook, click over to facebook.com/techradio. You can post your comments or questions there. I've got an article out there for you to enjoy. Don't be shy. Our phone number, 800-524-3604. Twitter users can send questions to @KentSDPB. And the email address, of course, inthemoment@sdpb.org. No spaces there, just all one word. inthemoment@sdpb.org gets you hooked up with us, as well as shooting us a text, 956-SDPB. That's 956-7372. If you have a quick question, like I said, don't be shy. Get it off us to us today, and one of our tech experts will take a crack at it for you. No problem at all. Amos, getting back to this thing, it's the trick in it. It's called Quad 9. And the sort of wink when you do that is that's the router designation you put in to access the new DNS service.
Yeah, so we should probably take a step back and talk about what it's trying to do.
Well, okay.
If you're using DNS, which is domain name resolution, that's how you translate www.techradio.com into a particular number, right? Every website on the internet has an internet address, and that's where your system goes to look up those numbers so it can find where to pull that web page from. And the problem is that malware also uses that same thing. It also uses a lookup mechanism so that when sites that are hosting bad data get compromised or get found and removed, all they need to do is move it to a new place, redirect that address, and boom, they're up and going. Where Quad9 now is a service that's free for everybody to use, started by the Global Cyber Alliance and has a major partner with IBM. They are going to be blocking any resolution to what they find out about as bad domains or systems that are known to be compromised by botnets or phishing attacks or other malicious type hosts. So if you're interested in using it, it's free. Just put 9.9.9.9 into your DNS settings, either on your router or on your local machine, and that's all it takes to use it. It's pretty easy to remember. Many of us in the tech industry have been using the 8.8.8.8 for a long time. That was Google's DNS, which does do some filtering for you as well. It's not dedicated to that, but it does do filtering. But this is another one that's easily rememberable and usable. So,
and we've talked about
a quick, easy way.
Right. We've talked about the Google service previously on the show being an alternative to what the stock, I guess, DNS is on your local ISP, right? So it's Google was supposed to have a faster resolution of those. That's why we talked about it on the show, right?
Yeah, you know, each ISP maintains a DNS server for you to use, although most ISPs are not doing any filtering for anything malicious. They just don't have the staff, they don't have the threat intelligence, and that's just not what it's designed to do. So rather than looking something up at your local ISP account, now your system will go and look it up at the IBM / Cyber Global Cyber Alliance system, and hopefully anything bad that your machine is trying to look up inadvertently that you don't know about will be automatically blocked.
Downsides to this?
You know, hopefully they've put in a system that is resilient and scales well, right? If everybody starts using a system all at once, there's definitely the possibility of it going down, being overwhelmed by all of the traffic that comes through. Also, since it will be a well-known used DNS system, will definitely be the target of those who try to use exploits like DNS poisoning or denial of service attacks. They're going to be a large target on the internet, so they'll have to defend themselves from that. But you know, considering who are they working with and the understanding of the internet, I'm sure they'll do well.
Sure, Jeff, do you have anything to throw in, or we good?
Yeah, it's interesting. It is a kind of a way they're funding it is interesting. It could go away. It probably won't, but it is kind of being privately funded, kind of in a grant-style process. So as long as the funding continues, it's going to be really good. And they're feeding in a lot of what we call threat meters. So on the back end, that DNS service is feeding in all these different commercial entities that are finding all the bad stuff out there. So pretty much in real time, as soon as anyone sees any bad stuff, it should be being blocked by the DNS. So it's actually a really great service.
Risks of false positives on this?
There's always risks. We have them at the state level through our feeds and stuff. But in most cases, it would be so very niche that it would probably be fixed within a day or two anyway, and it's not going to, you know, be any major site. And you can always, and if you do run into something, you have to have access. You could always go in and change your DNS server settings back to Google temporarily to do that.
Or your local ISP, if that works for you. So this is something I guess I might try this weekend. It's probably a good reminder to get in and check and see if all the patches have been done to my router. And like I try to do commonly, I guess the word I'm looking for here is firmware updates. To see if there's any firmware for my router. And then I think the other updates that it's supposed to do automatically. And I understand there's dangers for that, but I throw those dangers to the wind and try to stay up to date on my router. This is something I might go ahead and give a try, a little bit more reading and try it. Cause like you say, you can always change it back. You can always change it to something else. I certainly want to get covered, as much as I can on that angle of things. Amos, anything else in the or Jeff, for that matter, anything else in the security world we should know about before we move on?
Oh, well, there's a lot of stuff, but a lot of it's kind of minor stuff right now. There is a new big, very targeted, very effective phishing scam going on using Microsoft Word documents, even if you turn off macros, which is a big deal for us because just the ability, most of all the MS Office compromises, malware you get through email, mm-hmm. depend on the macros being enabled within the program. And we turn that off globally, and that just stops 99.9999% of everything. This bypasses that. So this is kind of part of the deep dive NSA dump that we talked about in the past that got mm-hmm. leaked out online. It is interesting. It is being actively mitigated. The user still has to click a button inside the document to allow it, but if they're not paying attention and click on it, it's a fairly bad malware exploit they get. So it's being mainly targeted by large corporations out of North Korea.
I had heard that the macro in Word documents thing was kind of coming back, and maybe this was part of that to watch out for.
It kind of is, but it's because most people now disable macros. And even when it prompts you to enable macros, if you open a document, we actually hide that at the state level. We don't allow the user the options. There's other ways to enable it safely. That stops almost all that. This basically re-enables it behind the scenes without you knowing about it, and it uses the same format, but it just tricks the user into re-enabling macros if you've turned them off.
I think I saw a statistic. Now, like I say, you're protecting me from my own, I guess, not stupidity, but carelessness on because I work for the state, but many others don't. Most people don't. I saw a statistic that kind of set me back this week, and that's one out of 14 people will click on anything in an email. we try to help people understand that you don't want to do that on this show, but there are quite a number of people out there that will just click on anything. And that's it sounds crazy, but it's true. And folks shouldn't do that. And especially if they got attachments and any kind of attachments, it drives me crazy when I get a lot of attachments every day from people with press releases for something or another, from bake sales at the holiday time to, you know, plays and other things. And they say, hey, check out this attachment. I'm never going to check out that attachment. Don't ask me to, you know, put what you need to in the body of the email, please. But don't attach things. Even PDFs, it's risky to do that. So, you know, really there's mostly no reason ever to attach a Word document or any other to an email. I really can't condone that, but there may be other reasons, but in that case I don't see one. But that's certainly something to watch out for. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to step away from the security side of things a little bit and get into let's just put it out there, Joel's new phone. We're going to talk about the new phones and some problems people have been having with the Apple updates with iOS 11, and we'll get to that after this quick break. And we're back to In the Moment Tech Radio. We have the experts on deck with you today. Joel Brovelite, our Mac expert, and we have a couple of really great security guys. Amos Asip is here, and Jeff Litterick from the Bureau and Peer, all on deck to answer questions that you may have today. One of which from Jim in Sioux Falls. Is there any advantage of changing from a DOCSIS 3.0 modem to a DOCSIS 3.1 modem if a person is not planning on purchasing the higher level of bandwidth service from the local internet provider? So the DOCSIS modem is a cable modem, correct?
Correct.
And is there a reason to upgrade if you're not going to go for the higher speeds?
Immediately, no. In the future, yes. And it's not only just speeds. It's feature sets, upstream channeling, bonding, a whole bunch of technical stuff of how stuff's encoded and stuff. I'll give you the example. I was DOCSIS 2.0 for a long time because I didn't need the speed upgrade, and I had to upgrade to DOCSIS 3.0 because all the 3.0 users were actually eating up my upstream channels and was causing problems for me for upstream traffic until I could use the extra channels 3.0 allows. 3.1 is kind of the same thing. As more 3.1 users come in, they're going to be using a broader channel range and kind of stepping with higher speeds on your channels upstream. You probably want to be 3.1 so you have the equal benefit of all those channels to balance the traffic out so you don't get stuck on a channel that only you can use and everyone else is trying to use at the same time, but you don't have the flexibility, unlike the other people, to switch to other channels. Now, this is all very technical behind the scenes. You don't normally have to worry about it. And it's not going to be instantaneous. It's going to take time. But as more people move to the higher speeds, you are going to want to be a 3.1 modem to just take advantage of the extra features and help the neighborhood, so to speak, because you are always in a cable modem network sharing among all your neighbors, and what they are doing actually does impact you to some extent in some ways. So you kind of have to think about it like that.
Okay. So not an immediate payoff, but something to think about down the road.
Yeah, it took me like 2 years after the big migration to 3.0 DOCSIS before I had to upgrade. And I was running most of the time, but when it would ever get busy, my modem would just basically seize up because it had no upstream bandwidth because it could only use 4 channels while 3.0 could use 8 channels. And when those channels got busy, unlike the other users, it couldn't move to the other channel and got stuck limiting you. So, it's a time kind of thing over time. There are new technical features that also improve performance besides bandwidth and stuff in the 3.1 spec, but, we don't want to read a technical journal over the radio. So
sure. Well, can you give me one or two highlights? What are some of the best things about 3.1 over 3.0? If let's just say I'm going to, when my local provider gives me the option to go up to gigabit or whatever it's going to be, what other benefits am I going to get?
Basically, a little bit lower latency, better upstream bandwidth potentials, not just downstream, but also upstream. And remember, for businesses, upstream it can be very, very important depending on what they're doing, just not the downstream. A better channel separation, so if there is noise or problems on one channel, you will be able to keep your bandwidth without problems. So think of it as the system can degrade a little bit more and they can have more time to fix it before you just get, you get turned off. So problems like that, like slow degradation or something that may cause you just to lose internet, will probably keep you up running a little bit longer, or how they fix it before you lose everything.
So less bogged down for me is what you're saying.
Yeah. Now, here's the caveat.
Mm-hmm.
The 3.1 modems of next year are going to be much better and less buggy than the 3.1 modems of this year. If you need a 3.1 feature, you need it, then you should upgrade immediately. If you don't, I would wait 1 or 2 years just for better availability, pricing, and also better debugging. There's only one manufacturer making 3.1 chipsets, and they are very slow in getting the chipsets out, so there's been problems in the past.
Mm-hmm.
with the hardware side. So it never hurts to wait unless you absolutely need a feature. But, in 2-3 years, I'd probably just bite the bullet, even if you're not using extra bandwidth, to get the better reliability and other stuff that will come with.
Great. So Jim can hang out and wait for those other modems to come on the market, which will probably make them cheaper, and they'll probably, sounds like to me that from what you've said, it'll be better. So,
and it's one thing to remember, there will be a DOCSIS 4.0. They're already working on those specs, so 3.1 is not going to be the be-all, end-all. It's just like 3.0 was it, 2.0 was it, 1.0. Mm-hmm. It's like any kind of networking device. Every so often you are going to need to upgrade. And in some cases, like major upgrades, like 4.0, may be forced on you because the whole cable plant has, you know, backward compatibility, legacy compatibility, slows everybody down until everybody's up to the new standards. So
sure.
That can happen in the future. Be aware.
Great. Well, folks, if you've got questions for our panelists like Jim did, we've got a couple great ways to get a hold of us. In the moment at sdpb.org is how Jim chose. Just slip us off a quick email. We'd love to read that on the air and get a question answered for you. We have an 800 number. It's 800-524-3604 if you'd like to call and talk to us. Or a lot of folks like to send that text message these days. 956-SDPB. That's 956-7372. Joel Brovelite, speaking of not waiting until the next upgrade, you got the iPhone X. It's got the big X on the box. First impressions.
You know, it's a really, really, really nice phone. I haven't experienced any of the, you know, issues that, if you Google iPhone problems, that you'll see, they affect kind of only a small group of people. It did take me a little while to get used to using the phone without the home button. You know, after a couple of days, it just becomes completely normal. And then if I pick up my daughter's phone or my wife's phone, I'm like, how do I do this again? So, you know, like so many things, once you learn how to use it, it's kind of second nature. But that was the only thing I would say is that, you know, because it's so different from all the phones that I've had before and most people have had before with having a home button, you know, it takes a little time to get used to the screen. I think it's beautiful and it takes great photos and I like the way it feels. I told that to you about the iPhone 8. I really like that the back and the front are glass. I like that feel of the phone and it seems to be pretty sturdy. I don't have a case on it right now and dropped it several times, you know, normal type of dropping, not the crazy dropping, and haven't had any issues. So.
Do you, now normally over the course of this show, we've talked about things such as improved performance or battery life or other typical things like that, but are we beyond that discussion now? Is every phone we're going to be buying going to be up to snuff for speed and battery, you know, sipping just the amount of battery it needs, or are we still talking about those things?
I wouldn't say that about battery. I mean, I still think phones vary widely with battery. You know, having not had the phone that long, I can only say that battery's been really good, not noticeably better, or certainly not any worse than any iPhone I've had in the past. Like all phones, I assume over time the battery will decrease in effectiveness. Because I trade them up about once a year, it's never been an issue for me. Mm-hmm. You know, I wouldn't say it. It might last a little longer than the previous phone that I have. Maybe a few more hours. I don't have to worry about charging at the end of the day if I've used it. But that could just be because it's brand new. There's a slightly larger phone than the iPhone 8 that I was using previously. You know, I charge my phone at night, every night. It's not an issue for me. So that's never been a problem for me, you know, and I've got a charger in the car and all that. And as far as battery goes, and I think you're right about the processor speed. You know, the iPhone X has a brand new Apple design processor in it. And that if you look at the benchmarks and the speed tests, we should call them, you know, kind of beats everything on the market. You know, you don't really notice that unless you're using an app that demands a lot of power. I can tell you that it feels butter smooth when you're doing it, when you're just doing normal phone functions, but so did the iPhone 8, so I can't really say. So I think you're right about processor speed. Just find the phone that's right for you. Don't really look at the specs, but I think we've been doing that for a while.
Is there something on the 10 that you're doing now that you haven't done in previous phones because you can? It's got the speed or the display or anything like that?
Well, you know, the speakers on it are quite a bit louder than any of the phones I've had previously. So I've actually used it to, you know, rather than using a Bluetooth speaker or, you know, hooking it up to something else, I've actually just listened to music when I'm doing work on the phone. which I haven't really done in a long time. I've done that on the iPad, especially the newer iPads have really good speakers. The speakers on the phone are incredible for a phone. I mean, I won't say that they won't beat a great stereo system, but certainly better than any phone that I've had previously. So there's definitely that. And I've probably taken more pictures with this, but that could just be a function of, you know, having, you know, the newest camera, and it's got lots of features that you can kind of software edit on the fly. So that's kind of fun. So I'm taking more pictures, but that could decrease after time. Hard to tell.
So a couple of entertainment things.
Definitely, yeah.
Definitely, okay.
Great. Yeah, and then, you know, it's got tons of storage. You know, even the lower end of the phone has got, you know, tons of storage compared to the previous models. So that's kind of nice, although I tend to usually get the larger ones if possible, so I don't have to worry about that. I know that there's Google's phone out there says, you know, you'll never run out of space because we upload everything to the cloud, which you can do also on the iPhone. But honestly, it's probably because I'm old. I'd rather have more storage up front just in case.
Sure.
That definitely is because I'm old, I suppose.
Okay. Features of iOS, there's a new, it's not even new anymore, right? The iOS 11?
iOS 11, yeah. It's newish, still a month and a half old.
Sure.
2 months old.
What did that bring us? Was there some multitasking things that came along with that, or what are the big advantages to upgrading to that?
Well, one thing is I noticed, you know, with the previous phones, there's kind of a minor speed increase after the update, so I would definitely recommend it to anybody. It's a free update. There's definitely some. There's actually recently an update for iOS 11. I think 11.2, or it might have been 11.1, that was just pushed out in the past couple of weeks. That actually increased the battery life for many of the phones on the market. Just kind of minor software tweaks. So some people have said that iOS 11 improved their battery function. There are a lot of people that said that it decreased the battery function, and probably that's because it kind of set on default a lot of background running of applications, which you can go turn off yourself. So I guess that's not exactly a feature, but a bug. But that has also been fixed in updates. You know, like so many things, anything that's been released, there's just going to be updates, whether the security updates or you know, feature fixes. That's just the modern world. That's just how things work. I'm trying to think of other features. Boy, you have to make me think over 2 months ago. Actually, longer than that, because I've been running iOS 11 since the summer using the developer release of it. I know the dock, or not the dock. When you swipe up to access your functions like brightness or play audio or to access the camera or, you know, whatever it is, the clock, mm-hmm. calculator, those type of things, the interface has been completely redone there, and it's fantastic. It takes advantage of multi-touch so that you can swipe up and increase the brightness, but if you drill down on it, press into it, you can get more brightness features. The same thing with all the other functions, and the multitasking, which you were kind of hinting towards, mm-hmm. is new. Accessing your apps is you know, switching between applications or multitasking is quite a bit easier in iOS 11. Again, there's no reason not to update. If you're on the fence, get off the fence. Just update.
I'm actually going to. I'm updating to 11.1.2 as we speak. Just preparing.
There you go.
Hey, could get Amos and the Android folks in on the discussion. Do we know how battery life compares between? Are they fairly similar between Android products and iPhones these days? Or does that just sort of depend on the battery, the milliamps or whatever built into the individual phones?
And it's also going to depend on your usage, right? I mean,
sure.
If you're the type of person who's got the screen on constantly, or if you've got any of the extraneous features, for instance, the Androids have the, in some cases, the always-on display in which, you know, it shows you your latest updates or a clock or something. There's a lot of variability in that. Joel, do you know what size battery is in the latest iPhone?
Oh, look, you know, I've never, nobody's ever asked me.
I don't think Apple people care, do they?
No, we don't care.
That's right.
Basically, it's not a replaceable battery.
Right,
so, go ahead.
There's actually two batteries in the new iPhone, kind of in an L-shaped arrangement, if you Google it. So, non-replaceable, but it's a little bit bigger than the last one, because they... And to make it work, they had to pin it as an L shape. So there's two physical batteries now.
Okay. Well, thanks for the answer.
Yeah, that's what Apple's been doing for most of their products in the past several years. They're just as much space as they can use inside the machine and whatever orientation. This iPhone's not the only device Apple has made that has had either a battery in a strange shape or multiple batteries just fitting in as much as possible. That's the big advantage to having a battery that's not replaceable. A lot of people would rather have a battery that's replaceable, but much of that hardware that you need for a replaceable battery could be better utilized by more battery.
Yeah,
so,
and with the current technology, I want to put this in because I've done tests and stuff. The biggest battery consumer is the display. If apps are running in the background, they almost never use almost any battery. Now, every once in a while, you have a bad app that may keep the CPU really running, and if your phone is hot, that's an indication of that. But if I leave stuff running, like radio and stuff, and turn the display off, it can last days. But if I turn the display on the whole time, it lasts a matter of an hour before I need to recharge. It's the display that is the biggest, by far, battery consumer. So the more you can keep the display off, the better the battery life you have, at least until we get to the next generation of apps that are supercomputer type, AI type things running on your phone that require a lot more CPU. We're pretty good, but battery is really being limited by the display.
Okay.
One caveat to that is apps that use network for upload and download of data, which, you know, is most apps, that will use your battery up. Not near as much as the display. Jeff's 100% right about that. But any application that updates in the background, pulling information down from either a cellular or a Wi-Fi network, and in some cases even Bluetooth, will use battery up, which was the problem in iOS 11. Those apps in the background that were pulling data down and uploading data, even when you had the display off, were using tons of battery. So, you know, if you're having battery issues and you've tended to display, as Jeff mentions, you know, the second thing is to see what apps are maybe hitting the network when you're not using it.
Sure. Staying on the phone side of things and security that we just talked about, Amos and Jeff, I've been getting some notices from my carrier on my Android phone that want me to do security upgrades. They say that now things about the have to do with remote lock and wipe and things like that are being taken care of by Android itself. So the company is reshaping their security programs on their phones. I was a little skeptical when I first started seeing these notices, but lately I've kind of been clicking on them because they're kind of persistent. Is there anything I need to watch for on updating the security on my carrier recommended security on my Android phones? Have you been seeing these?
Yes and no. One thing to remember, Android, kind of like Apple, actually releases in the background a security update, just like Microsoft, every month. That goes to the carriers and gets downloaded. The only time you should be trusting those is, if you want to double check, is go into your phone settings and look for a software upgrade, because that's where that should be at. Otherwise, I would be very untrustworthy of changing that stuff, because most of that stuff will be taken behind the scenes in either an automatic phone software update or a Google Play app update to make those changes without you having to do anything. Mm-hmm. Many phones, though, will not update the phone itself without you knowing about it and stuff, because it's a big, you need to be on power and stuff. Those are legitimate. You can always go to your settings in your phone, and every phone's going to be a little bit different, but look for your phone upgrade or system software upgrade. It'll be a setting inside the settings, and if it says you have one sitting there waiting to upgrade, you know, put it on power and do the upgrade. It is very important.
Okay, so now you're beginning to worry me, because I have a notification right now that says protect your device now. Tap to activate security on your device, and it comes up and it's got my carrier and it wants permissions and other things. But you're starting to worry me a little bit.
Well, this is one of the things we learned in a how you break Google G Suite two-factor that these people have developed, is that stuff is very spoofable. They know who your carrier is when they send you an SMS text message, for example. Mm-hmm. They know who the carrier is. They know, in fact, they can usually figure out the last four digits of your phone number and display that to fool you into making you trust them. I'd be very cautious if it's just an SMS-type notification. Most system updates come through a system update notification, which is a little bit different. And looks a little bit different depending on your theme of your phone. On Android, it's, you know, there's a lot more variables. But on Apple, you know, you get that system prompt. You're not getting an SMS text. If you're getting an SMS text, that would be garbage, and you go away and you do not click on that. It has to be a system type update, a system notification. It should be in your notification area too, and not in your SMS text.
Yep, that's where it's at. So I think I'm good.
I think a good rule of thumb is that anytime it asks you to update, always say no until you manually go in and hit the check for updates button, and then you're pretty safe.
I'm going to do that while we take a break. When we come back, I've got a web question about laptops and other devices, and we want to talk a little bit about Black Friday and some upcoming pending deals, but we'll do that on the other side of this break.
Support for Reporting on Technology and Innovation comes from Juna Sleep System. Personalize your mattress. More information at junasleep.com.
And welcome back to Tech Radio on this edition of In the Moment. We have a few minutes left in the show. We've got a few things to get through. If you have any questions, get a hold of us on our Facebook page, facebook.com/techradio. The conversation carries on there well after the mics get turned off. Go ahead and drop us a note there, as did Andrea and Jim. I want to purchase a laptop computer. I use a computer mostly for email and looking at specific sites, search for specific items, and general use. I don't need a lot of features since I am mostly computer illiterate. What is the best bang for my buck, especially with Black Friday approaching? A basic question, I know, but need some direction. Thanks, guys. Enjoy the show, though many times I don't have a clue what you're talking about. Well, neither do I most of the time. So we're in good company. I noticed a slew of laptop deals on Black Friday from a number of different vendors, ranging from Chromebook-type things for just not much money, all the way up to gaming laptops even being discounted incredible amounts of money. What's the best way to go for this person? Kind of a tablet-y kind of a, maybe a Chromebook or maybe an actual laptop itself?
Personal preference on my side, yep. I would say if you take them at their word for as they described it and not trying to forecast any sort of, well, you'll probably want to eventually, I would say Chromebook is the way to go. When I bought my first Chromebook, I'm not even sure how long ago it's been, a number of years ago, and it is still performing today as though it was a brand new machine that came out of the box. You know, all it is a physical web browser, right? It's just a way to get to a web browser. And if that's all you're doing is looking at websites and looking things up and using anything internet-based, maybe it's Google Docs, anything that's through that web browser, that's the way to go. It's fast. It's specific to that task. It's purpose built, and there's no bloat on those devices, and there's lots to choose from, lots of different form factors. So if you want 17 inch or you want 13 inch, for big screen versus small and portable, lots of options. But I would say that would be my recommendation.
So this is basically running Android, correct? So it's kind of just a different form factor. It's got a keyboard and a screen versus like a little Android tablet.
Right, right.
Well, technically it's not running Android.
Okay.
It's a full different type of Linux called Chromium in the background. It is actually quite a bit different than Android. Android apps do not play. You have to actually use Chrome apps, which is not a big deal. But Android was a totally separate development team. There's been some talk about unifying them, but nothing yet. The app stores are totally different and completely separate. But saying that, we have tons of students in like the Sioux Falls School District running Chromebooks for all their needs. It's a very, very viable and good platform and low cost. And for what she described, I would say, depending on cost and functionality, any tablet, any Chromebook, any Microsoft Surface tablet, the only thing you might want to add is a keyboard if it doesn't come with them. They all have options for keyboards, every single one, if you're going to type heavily. Mm-hmm. That's an add-on thing. Otherwise, any of those, an iPad will serve you probably for your needs just fine.
Okay.
The Chromebooks do last a long time, though they will actually. Google has stopped supporting some of the old ones in the past, so they are like the iPads. They'll last quite a few years, but they won't last for software updates indefinitely. So
caveat with Chromebooks is you need to be somewhere where there's internet all the time, right?
Yeah, but if you're searching the web and doing email, you kind of need that anyway, right?
Yeah, all right.
And the other thing with the Chromebook is you need a Google account. Everything's tied through Google. All your storage, all your stuff is Google Apps, Google Drive. Everything's Google. There's really no local storage on the machine itself. There's a little bit for offline work for documents and stuff. So you can do some offline stuff, but you're kind of tied into Google. But for what she's planning to do, you know, there's not much there. The Windows Surface stuff would give you a little bit more options and apps and stuff because you can run a lot of universal Windows apps and stuff, so you could run Office, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what comes at a much higher price point and probably way too much functionality for what they're describing they need.
They do say bang the buck and looking for a deal on Black Friday. Joel, anything to add?
You know, I would say just kind of in contrast to what those gentleman been saying,
mm-hmm.
If you're not very familiar with computers and you don't know a lot about it, I would actually probably steer clear of, personally, I would steer clear of a Chromebook. I would go, and I would also steer clear of the cheapest machine you could buy. I would go with like something that runs Windows, latest version of Windows, maybe the Asus. They're very easy to use. It comes with Windows, so likely you're already going to be familiar, if you've ever used a computer before, with Office, so you'll be able to do that. More people are going to understand how to do it, so you probably have people around to help you. Or you could go with a Mac if other people around you can help you with that. Again, these are quality machines, whether you're talking about Asus or HP or Apple. Those would be what I would look at, because if you're not super computer literate, you don't want to have something that you're going to have to tinker with, or that maybe because your internet's down, you can't do something on it, and then you get frustrated and you don't know why. So that would be my opinion. Look at some major brands and don't buy the cheapest one you can.
Okay. Well, hey, great advice and good luck. And certainly drop us a note back and let us know what you decided and how you liked it after this Friday next Friday actually is Black Friday. But as we've mentioned on the show today, these deals have been going on for quite a while. Are they trying to poach as much money from us as they can ahead of time, or what's the deal there? Is it using the advantage of being open all the time to try to prevent or get in before everybody gets out on Black Friday?
Well, I'm going to put this out.
Yep.
Because this is an interesting fact that even Amazon needs to start worrying about. We talk about Amazon and online sales stuff. Walmart grew their online business faster and bigger than Amazon did last quarter and last couple quarters. And that's Walmart. You know, you always think of Walmart as the retail store. Their online stuff is growing faster than Amazon and is humongous. In fact, Walmart's now starting to raise the prices on the online website to encourage people back into the stores. Even out the price, so it may be cheaper to go drive instead of waiting for it to ship. Which tells me retail store traffic is down. People are shopping online. More and more people shop online. More and more people are not going to the retail store. If they are, it's just to look at something to see how it is and they order online. Because the shipping is, in many places, is so much, it's almost the same as you driving across town to get to the store. If you're in a big city, you can have it delivered to your front porch. So when you get into that philosophy, why have a Black Friday when you're trying to drive a lot of traffic into the store? Because they can shop online anytime. It doesn't matter when the sales are. As the Super Nintendo release noticed, if it's at 3 a.m., they still sell out in seconds at 3 a.m. People will wait up. So at that point, why not spread your sales out and have people spreading, coming in and buying more stuff online over a longer period of time, getting, you know, stuff, and just spread your sales out so you're not dealing with the mad rush and everybody's still getting the bargains they envisioned. But the issue comes is it's now a whole month of Black Friday, right, instead of a single day, or Cyber Monday, right? Well, why not Cyber Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday? And that's what I'm seeing. This site, in fact, there was one that was the Black Week has started. Amazon did Black Week is this week. It's going to be a whole week thing, not a Cyber Monday kind of thing special. Good. So,
I was just going to ask you, just where's the top couple of places you look for tech deals? And we'll just go around the table on this one. So, Jeff, you mentioned Amazon. Do you have
Amazon,
another?
Amazon, Newegg is a big one. Those are part of my two. Walmart, if you know what you're really looking for, you can actually get some good deals on Walmart, and they will ship to your store, so you can go pick it up if you don't want to have it, you know, delivered to your front door, like TVs or and stuff like that.
Okay. Amos?
Those are the major ones.
Okay. Amos, you got a couple favorites?
Amazon is definitely has to be my go-to. I recently picked up the new app called Wish. If you know what you're looking for and you can weed through the inexpensive junk that's on there, there's good prices to be had on the Wish app. It takes a little longer to get to your door because it's got to ship from overseas, but worth kind of perusing through anyway.
Okay. Joel, do you have a favorite online shop?
Online? You know, probably Amazon, just like the other gentleman. Although I do tend to, before I buy anything, I will tend to go to either Best Buy or Target to double check that. Sometimes I can either get it faster or, you know, if you walk in the store most of the time, you can get them to match the price even on Amazon as long as it's sold by Amazon. So I tend to do that when I can.
Sure, absolutely. Shop local is definitely a way to go. It's immediate and nothing beats walking up and putting your hands on a product. And we just talked about laptops. You know, not all laptops are built the same. Some have the keypads, some don't. Some people prefer that, some don't. You might not know that until you walk up and physically grab onto it and try a few things. So there's always, if the ability is there for you to go local, absolutely try it out there and check the prices.
I will pit this out for local shopping, which I do a lot, but I also do this. Both Walmart and Target, or at least Target used to be. I haven't been on Target for a very long time, so there's not one local to me. But you can actually go online and see if the item is in stock in your local and what stores, like in Sioux Falls, which one has it. So you don't, you know, drive around and they're out of stock or something. You can actually go online if you know what you want, and you can see, check my store or stores in my area, which ones have them in stock. And if they don't, it's usually an overnight kind of thing or one day where they're get it to the store, and then you just go pick it up at the store.
Well, thank you, Jeff. Appreciate your time today, as well as Amos and Joel. Thank you so much for your opinions and your thoughts on these subjects. That is, unfortunately, all the time we have for today's show. Again, thank you to our panelists, and remind you that SDPB is always there for you with our app or at sdpb.org. Go there and click on Listen. Have a great weekend, everybody.